Richard Price is one of the writers who described life in New York after September 11th in last Sunday's New York Times Magazine. We invited him to read an excerpt and talk with us. Price is the author of such novels as Freedom Land, Clockers, and The Wanderers. He wrote the screenplays for Sea of Love and The Color of Money and co-wrote last year's movie Shaft. Price, his wife, and their two daughters live in Manhattan. This reading recounts a conversation he had in October with his younger daughter, who's 14 and a half.
"Dad, can I tell you something?" his daughter said. "You promise not to get mad at me?" "Not really." "I dropped my cell phone in the toilet," she winced. "It's dead." "Don't worry about it," he said. "Take mine." "Seriously?" Then, with as much guilt as relief, she added, "What are you going to use?" "Not your problem. It's just, you know, with everything going on these days, it makes me breathe easier to know I can reach you no matter what." The kid's face went taut, not what he intended. "Look," he said, touching her arm, "don't get me wrong. Right now in this city, you need to keep your eyes open. You know, use common sense or whatever. But it's also very important that you live your life as normally as you can." That one opened up her floodgates. "What if they bomb us?" she said. "Who bomb us? Nobody's going to bomb us. I don't even know who they are." "What if they hijack another plane?" she said. "Look, here's the deal. You go to school, you work hard, no goofing off. You do your homework, you study for your tests. You go to your soccer practices. Game time rolls around, not too many headers. Come the weekends, you hang with your friends. Saturday morning, Sunday morning, you have a contest with your sister, see who can sleep the latest, okay? You live your life, okay?" "Okay," she said, her face lightening, a light peck and a dash for the door. "Where are you going?" he called out. "I'm going to hang out with Cole." "Hey, do me a favor," stopping her with one foot in the street. "Don't go into any big stores tonight, okay?" "What?" A little stutter in her step. "Why?" "Just," he faltered, "humor me. It's nothing." "Okay," she said. "And stay out of Washington Square." "What's wrong with Washington Square?" "Well, I never liked you hanging out at Washington Square." "What's wrong with Washington Square?" she said. "Absolutely, probably nothing. I'm just not too crazy about crowds right now, okay?" "Okay, okay," the tightness coming back into her face. "But what could you do?" "And oh," he winced preemptively, "the subway? You never heard of the subway. It doesn't exist for you, okay?" He then added, "Sorry." By the time the kid hit the street, she looked as if someone had strapped a boulder onto her back, her father wondering if it was more dangerous for her inside the house than out.
Yeah, I really like that a lot. And it made me think about how, you know, how difficult it is to try to protect your kids without scaring the heck out of them by your attempt to be protective because they know something's wrong.
Well, you know, the line in here, once I saw it in print, that has been driving me insane is use common sense. Like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does it mean for a kid or an adult or anybody walking down the street? If you see a Taliban guy with a Kalashnikov hanging out in front of Barnes & Noble's, don't go up and talk to him? I mean, what does that mean, use common sense? I mean, but that's what you wind up saying because you don't know what else to say.
What kind of puts you in the position that a lot of us feel the president has put us in? You know, when the president says, well, there's an alert, but go about your regular business.
Yeah, I don't get that one. I mean, I'm sure there's a reason that they're doing that way, but it eludes me for one. You know, I think it eludes everybody. I don't know what the point is.
But don't you kind of feel that way as a parent almost, that you're saying, well, go about your business, but use common sense, but don't do things that you otherwise ordinarily would do?
Well, it's the general helplessness. Plus, you know, kids, you know, you might have kids that are very alive to the information that's going around. And, you know, you might have kids that are basically kids, and it's not like it doesn't register, but it's not like this adrenaline starburst that goes off in their head and stomach. But the anxiety is there all the time. It's like, you know, being in a house with divorcing parents or something. I mean, just because you're quiet in front of the kids, that doesn't mean the tension is not there. That doesn't mean the kids aren't feeling it. And just because you're not, you know, doing drills where everybody's trying to put on their gas mask and inject each other with, you know, some Cipro drug, that doesn't mean that the kids don't pick up what's in the air, you know, some more pronounced than others. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Do you feel any different about living in and raising children in Manhattan now than you did before September 11th?
I do. I mean, in some ways, you know, you kind of feel like a sitting duck. On the other hand, I feel like, well, what's the alternative? I'm not gonna throw everything in a covered wagon and move to Wichita. Forget it. You know, this is where we live. This is who we are. You know, and you know, it's almost a cliche because everybody's saying it now. This whole thing about you live your life, go out, you know, go about your life. But it's true because the alternative is, I mean, there is no alternative.
My guest is novelist and screenwriter Richard Price. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is novelist and screenwriter Richard Price, author of the novels Freedomland, Clockers, and The Wanderers. He lives in Manhattan, and many of his books and movies are set there. Have you been writing since the 11th?
You know, I've heard other writers and artists and sort of, you know, people that sort of have to go inside their own heads to make what they make talk about this, and I feel the same way. Your first reaction is everything feels what you're doing is so trivial and so inconsequential that, you don't want to kill one more tree to publish one more page of this stuff. Yet, after a while, the trivial stuff is so important because the trivial stuff is the stuff of life. It's the stuff of life that we valued before September 11th, and we cannot stop valuing it because something happened. You know, and so it's very important to get back to what you were doing. For me, you know, I'm finishing a novel, and I had an ironic situation because the main character lives in a place like Jersey City and has a terrace where he's looking out on the New York skyline the whole damn book. And, you know, and it's now, what do you acknowledge that? Do you integrate it? Is it exploitative now? It's a little bit, you know, if you write, when I wrote Ladies Man in 1979, it was very, a large part of it was, you know, about, you know, gay male sexuality. And it was pre-AIDS. And in the midst of writing, AIDS came to the forefront. What do you do? I mean, do you acknowledge your writing in the moment, or do you place this in BC as opposed to AD?
So what are you doing with the new novel that you're finishing up?
I'm integrating it because I can't ignore it. I can't stand the novel on its head, but I just can't ignore it. And the struggle is to find the balance.
Do you resent having to go back and rewrite so much of it?
No, I don't. I mean, because my, you know, characters are allegedly human beings, and human beings respond like I responded to that. I'm different than I was before September 11th, and these characters are my characters. And even as I'm talking about this now, the whole thing sounds so stupid to talk about your dumb book and, you know, like, well, how are you going to use the World Trade Center or not? You know, but, it, you know, if they're going to come out of my consciousness, then I guess I'm going to use it.
So when you sit down to write, I guess you're actually writing about September 11th now, so perhaps it doesn't, so perhaps it comes easier because of that.
Well, what's happening with me in terms of writing about it is I'm not writing about the day, and I'm not writing about, you know, people that were in the maelstrom. I'm writing about people on the peripheries. And I've always been more interested in taking a slice off the periphery and, like, you know, assuming it's like DNA, it's going to replicate and represent the whole at some point. So I'm more concerned about what it's like for, say, like a, you know, sort of a shy 15-year-old kid who's been commandeered by his police officer mother into walking the two Puerto Rican kids who just moved into the neighborhood who are little and everybody assumes they're Arabic because of their looks, and these kids need bodyguards to get to school and back. And this kid doesn't want to do it because he's scared, and his mother's making him because she's a cop and she's fed up with this kid, you know, being a chicken. And how this, over the course of the week, how this kid sort of grows into the role of what is it? And these kids aren't even Arabic. I mean, but I mean, that's where I would go with something like this.
How honest are you with your children about the news and about your own actual fears?
Okay, well see, this is important because this goes back to what I'm saying. There are some kids that, you know, are very on top of it. And some kids that are, you know, it's just, you know, they're not at the age yet, you know, where they're reading newspapers. To my youngest daughter, I feel like, you know, she knows what's going on. Just tell her, no subways. She never takes a subway anyhow. Just tell her, and that stupid word, that stupid phrase, common sense, comes up. There's really not much to tell her. I don't want to make her any more anxious than she would normally be. I mean, we live and we're living. My other daughter was very, very alert to what's going on. In fact, her school has been evacuated 4 times for bomb threats since September 11th. And she told me that she doesn't feel like she's a kid anymore. She said that there are adults, and the adults are those who know what's going on, and everybody else is children. And she feels, at the age of 16, that she knows as much as we do. But she also realizes, and this is what's the scary and depressing thing, that because she knows as much as we do, she cannot come to us for the traditional comfort. Our role thing happens. She knows as much about anthrax as we do. So it's not, she can't come to her mom and dad and, you know, and say, you know, put me to bed and tell me not to worry. Because, you know, we don't have any secret information, or we don't have any secret strength. And this has forced her to feel like she's become an adult under protest. I mean, sort of an adult without adult experience. And she kind of is in a kind of a state of grieving for, you know, having blown off a good part of what it means to be a teenager. My only hope is that it's temporary and she's wrong. But, you know, it has to be acknowledged what she said, because I think it rings a bell with a lot of kids her age.
Richard Price, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, you're welcome.
Novelist and screenwriter Richard Price, his latest novel is Freedomland.